Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome back to Prospects to Pros on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Dane Brugler. I'm joined, as always, by Lance Zierlein. We're exactly 1 month away from the NFL Draft, recording this on March 29th. So, kind of crazy. We're 1 month out, but it feels like we're, you know, the draft's here because we had a major trade action over the weekend. I also posted my updated top 100, so we can hit on that a little bit today. But let's start with the trades that happened over the weekend. 49ers, they trade three firsts to go up for the number three overall pick. The Dolphins move back to 12, only then to move back up into the top 10, trading a future first rounder, going back up to six. So we got plenty to unpack here. Let's start with the 49ers. Obviously, this is a move to go get the quarterback. I think the question now is, which one? And for me personally, I know the first name that popped into my mind was Trey Lance. I love the fit there. You know, I think it's just, it makes a lot of sense, but there's plenty of Mac Jones smoke out there. And when you look at Kyle Shanahan's history with Kirk Cousins and Matt Schaub and Matt Ryan, I think you can see a connection in play style, guys that are similar wavelengths mentally with Shanahan. And I think something that we have to consider here is Kyle Shanahan does not attend many pro days, okay? He's going to one quarterback pro day this year, and that's Mac Jones. This is an unusual draft process where we don't have teams being able to do these private workouts and bringing the players to the facility and doing, we don't have any of that. The pro days are where you is your chance to go see the player, and you can't just dismiss that Kyle Shanahan is going to one quarterback pro day. And it's Mac Jones. So I don't know. All right, Lance, as you look at all of this, what was your first reaction? What has been going through your mind as you kind of process all of this? Where do you sit with the 49ers at that number three pick?
Well, I really thought that was a trade-in spot. I mentioned it in my last mock on the blurb. I thought that could potentially be a trade-in spot. I thought there was a chance that eight could move up to three. Mm-hmm. With Carolina. I mean, the likely teams were 8, were 12, and were 15 to me. 15, the Patriots, 12 was the 49ers, and then, of course, 8 is the Carolina Panthers. And so it wasn't a shock that there was a trade, but I was a little surprised at what the going rate was, to be honest with you. That was a lot to move up. And my immediate thought is, okay, Trey Lance. I mean, he fits this. He can throw on the move. He's got good size. He's got good mobility. He fits the Shanahan system, but with additional, additional mobility that we haven't seen with some of the Shanahan quarterbacks. This is a guy who can play behind Jimmy Garoppolo for a year, learn the system. He's already highly intelligent from a pro style, you know, standpoint and how he prepares and a full field reader. And then, I started hearing some comments and got a couple of texts about Mac Jones. And I think it's a real thing. I mean, I really think the Mac Jones thing is a real thing based on the information that I received. And I think it's something that is very interesting when you're going to trade that much draft capital for a guy who is really a game manager and a guy who runs the vehicle. And I'm not, listen, in Kyle Shanahan's offense, that's very important to be a game manager. Also can throw for 4,000 yards. Like we saw with Matt Schaub, we saw Matt Ryan become an MVP. I mean, you know, that's not to diminish that type of quarterback, but what I'm saying is I think you have to have things right around Mac Jones a certain way. And then, you know, I question whether or not he can make enough plays. Can he make the plays when guys don't get blocked? And I think that's a concern for all quarterbacks in this day and age because of the way that that the defensive fronts are getting faster and faster and faster. Can you extend plays on your own? We talk about running backs creating yards for themselves. Can you create time for yourself as a quarterback? And I think that's a very real conversation that you have to have about Mac Jones. I think the same is not true for either Justin Fields or for Trey Lance. But I think what's interesting that's developed here, Dane, is that pretty much all of us who do this, you know, for a living or who are in this space, it's funny, the fans just keep thinking, wait a minute, what about Justin Fields? This should be a Justin Fields move. And really, I don't think many people who are in the draft space are thinking that Justin Fields is going to be the call here. It's going to be either Jones or Lance.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I mean, I think where we are right now, we feel really good about Lawrence going one and Wilson going two. And it's just, and I even tweeted this out on Friday. A scout who was at BYU's pro day said, "Forget it, it's over. Wilson's going two." And you know, that's his opinion. That's one scout's opinion, but that certainly feels like what the prevailing thought is around the league. So if the draft starts at number three, that's where it gets, it's certainly interesting. And I think for a lot of us, myself included, and I think you probably fall on this as well, it takes a little bit to just, you know, have you wrap your mind around giving up that much draft capital for Mac Jones, you know, because we've talked about Mac Jones since the fall as a guy who, you know, really talented, but, you know, a little limited here and there. And, you know, I've had him in my top 50, you know, since the fall, but more like closer to 50 than towards one. And now we're talking about him possibly going third overall. And like, I have no doubt that Kyle Shanahan, you know, whatever quarterback he picks is going to have a level of success because he's going to a system that fits, you know, Kyle Shanahan's going to understand how to use him. And Mac Jones makes sense, but did the 49ers need to trade all that draft capital to go up and get him?
I don't think so. And
the Panthers are the one team where it's like, yeah. Well, you know, because, you know, obviously they coached him at the Senior Bowl. You know, Tepper was there in Mobile to see him up close and personal. You don't know what the Panthers are going to do. But my initial reaction was you didn't need to either. But, you know, maybe they just wanted to take all the guesswork out of it.
Well, that's the thing. You go to three and you knock it out. There's no questions asked. I think what's interesting here is, so when John Lynch came out and made a definitive statement, I know he told Steve Weiss this during the pro day workout when NFL Network had it on. He basically said, our quarterback is still, he contacted Jimmy Garoppolo right away and said, "You are still our quarterback right now. This is, you know, we still plan on rolling with you." Well, okay, if that's the case, that made total sense for Trey Lance. But if they really aren't serious about that, if they're willing to listen and take offers and maybe even move Jimmy Garoppolo, then you have a decision to make. Do you go with some type of bridge quarterback, or do you start right off the bat with Mac Jones? And Mac Jones has a type of, of football IQ in terms of a pro style passing attack and the way that, you know, Alabama's play calling, Sark's play calling and offensive design. I think it makes sense that Mac Jones from a football standpoint might be ready for this, coming from Alabama, coming from the SEC. I could see that. Maybe you'd roll with Mac Jones as a rookie. There's some weapons there to be had. Certainly you got an offensive line to protect him. I could see Mac Jones stepping right into the spot. Trey Lance, you wouldn't want to put in that position for his long-term good. You want him, you know, still learning and still growing as a quarterback. So if you move to four, then three is still open. If mm-hmm. you move to five with the Bengals, then, you know, if they would flip-flop with you, if you'd say we want to move up to five, then four and three are still concerns. And I know the Falcons probably wouldn't trade with the Carolina Panthers in their same division. So I think when it was all said and done, San Francisco basically said, look, let's just do this. Let's just go up and make no doubt about it. We're going to get the quarterback who we want. And I don't know who that quarterback's going to be, but they basically took any consideration out of play if you work under the assumption that, obviously, and I think both of us do, that the New York Jets are going to draft Zach Wilson. Now, let me throw you a curveball. If the Jets got a phone call from
Carolina.
From Carolina.
Because Carolina is one of the losers at it. Because, you mentioned it. Probably not getting the four for that trade within the division unless you're just way overpaying.
Right.
And so if another team's able to move up to four, then, you're eliminating quarterback options. So, yeah, the Carolina Panthers, do they get desperate? I mean, I don't think they're going to get desperate and make a move like that. But, sorry, go ahead and finish.
Well, I think, if the Jets got blown away by an offer, I don't think it's crazy that they could roll with Sam Darnold and pick up, a playmaker. Now, it would have to be within a certain portion of the draft. But let's say eight got really desperate and they said, look, we'll give you everything to move up to two. Everything, right. Anything you want and everything you want, we want that number two pick. Now, that would have to be, they'd have to be in love with Zach Wilson. I think more than likely Carolina now has to turn their attention to either Justin Fields. Well, okay, so let's say it's Trey Lance. I think Mac Jones could fall number eight, and I think they would draft Mac Jones at number eight.
Right.
Let's say Mac Jones goes number three. Well, then is Trey Lance four to the Falcons? Will the Falcons do they take a quarterback when they are stuck financially? I guess it wouldn't matter this year. You'd roll with Matt Ryan. I have to see what the cap consideration is for 2022. But if you're going to sit him anyway, then that would be the spot you sit him with the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, it's really interesting to just, parse all the ramifications here, because we've never seen quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4 in a draft. And all of a sudden, it's a very realistic scenario here. It's only happened twice before where we've seen quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3. And that seems like, it's almost a certainty at this point. You can't even rule out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. In this draft, which is just crazy if we see quarterbacks go with the first five picks, with some more trade action. So I don't think we can eliminate Atlanta from this conversation because, they restructured Matt Ryan's deal and that's, they're going to do that anyways. They can still absolutely go quarterback here. What are the Panthers going to do? And then is there another team? The Broncos feel like they're involved to a certain level. I don't know if they're all in on drafting a quarterback this year, but to a certain level, just all the feedback I'm getting feels like they're involved to a certain point. And so would they be looking to make a move up a little bit? Are the Patriots just lurking there waiting? Let me ask you, I'll ask it this way. Do you think we see another trade between now and the draft, or do you think it's going to stand pat and teams are going to wait and find out what happens 1, 2, 3, then that's where we're going to see the trade action start to unfold.
Man, that's a tough question because I still think we could see some action. I think the problem is if the Falcons, you just don't know what they're going to do. I mean, if you assume they're going quarterback, then there's really not a lot of reason to make any more trades unless you want to move in front of the Carolina Panthers. And who wants to do that? Maybe the Broncos. Maybe the Broncos would flip 7 and 9. To get a hold of the ahead of the Panthers for Justin Fields or whoever's left at quarterback, maybe if that's really what they're looking to do, if they're really over Drew Lock, that's tough because you have to ask yourself. There's two big things you have to factor in. Number one, and I think the biggest factor is what happens with Deshaun Watson, because remember now. You can move up for all these quarterbacks that you want to, but the most talented quarterback of all is probably Deshaun Watson. We know Deshaun's situation right now. He's unlikely to play anytime soon. He may find himself on the commissioner's exempt list. We don't know what's going to happen. But I still think you shouldn't just completely write off Deshaun Watson in this whole thing, because depending on what happens, and let's remember, this situation and saga, if it got paid off or taken care of or whatever goes down, if it doesn't involve suspension, or even if it does involve a suspension, but it's not a year-long suspension, we could still see a trade by the Texans to one of these teams after the draft. So you never know if they're having discussions with another team behind the scenes about contingency plans moving forward. So I think that's one thing you have to keep in mind for two teams that have been mentioned as possible Deshaun targets: Carolina 8, and Denver 9. So it's worth keeping that in mind, that that could be a contingency plan, even though right now, certainly, we have no idea where those cases are headed, but that could still be something that one of those teams are thinking about.
Yeah, it's especially Carolina with their draft options dwindling. They can't completely close that door, even if it is, you know, it's close to being shut. So there's, and this is why we love the draft. There's so many different ways this could go, and different ways each organization could be shaped by these trades and what teams, what they decide to do. The other two teams that were involved in the trade action, the Dolphins, they moved back to 12 and then they moved back up to 6, which is really interesting. It has to be for a pass catcher, right? I mean, was that your first reaction as well, as they want to ensure that they're going to get the pass catcher of their choice up there at number 6?
Absolutely. I thought it was a great move, because you move back, you add a draft capital, and you're still going to get whoever you want. I mean, mm-hmm. unless something happens at 4 that we don't expect, or unless the Bengals, which is possible, the mm-hmm. Bengals could still go. Because I think the move for the Bengals, you know, I'm not the number one Penei Sewell guy on the, you know, in mm-hmm. this draft. I still think one of the moves is potentially saying, you know what, let's go with free agency. Let's try to patchwork this right now on the offensive line, and let's go add a high end player like Chase or Pitts, right, or Smith. I don't care who it is, because those players are better to me than the tackle you would get. That's a need to me. If you have a rare playmaker, then you draft that, Dane. That's what I would do. And I try to make things work offensively. Now, you know, it's easier said than done. You have to have somebody there, but I think that's the concern. That's why you have to have two players in mind if you're Miami. And I think Pitts or Chase would be probably the two that they would have in consideration.
See, and okay, let's do a quick top 6 mock draft. Lawrence and Wilson 1-2. Let's just, for argument purposes, for this hypothetical, we'll say Mac Jones at 3.
I think you're hearing from the same people I am, because you're not dancing around this, Dane. You're not even pretending to play the Trey Lance game. You're going right after the Mac Jones. I've heard that from a couple people, and I'm like, and they're people I trust.
I know.
I'm thinking, man, this is going to go down as Mac Jones, and you're not even playing. I still have to pretend with Trey, like, well, maybe Trey Lance, because that's what I thought. I mean, that's who I believe it should be. But the more I'm hearing since I put out a revamped mock draft with Trey Lance at number 3. I can't even believe you would give up that match draft capital for Mac Jones, but whatever.
This is the time of year where you don't believe what you hear, but there's too much smoke.
No, year, Dane, don't we hear fans like, oh, can't be Baker going number 1. It's going to be, there's no way Daniel Jones would go that high.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
There's no way Josh Allen would go. Okay. I mean, it happens every single year, and people act brand new every year. Like, what? I never heard of this before. Only in like 6 of the last 20 drafts. I mean, you know, it happens all the time.
Listen, the pro day thing is big. Not seeing these guys live, you know, no private workouts, can't bring them to the facility, anything like that. And Kyle Shanahan's going to one quarterback pro day. That tells you something right there. That alone is enough evidence to at least believe that it's a strong possibility to happen. And, you know, Alabama's already had their pro day. This is basically a Mac Jones pro day. So, you know, it's a really fascinating development. So, all right, let's just say 1, 2, 3. That's okay.
That's fine. Mac Jones. Now what do we do? I'm going to go Trey Lance at 4.
That's what I was going to go to. Let's say Trey Lance.
I would not have put Mac Jones at 4. I'd put Surtain mm-hmm. at 4. But now I'm putting Trey Lance at 4.
Yeah. Let's say that's what it is. A 4, 5. I'm going to say Ja'Marr Chase here. I think reunite him with Joe Burrow and have some fun with, he replaces AJ Green basically in that offense, with him, T Higgins, Tyler Boyd in the slot. I mean, that's got the makings of some fireworks.
Okay, then 6. Oh, no, I think without question. And I think that's one of the things with Joe Burrow. I trust him to get rid of the football.
Right.
So I don't think you have to have the perfect offensive line right now. That's people who always just say you have to have. I put Pitts there in my first mock draft because I think that you give Joe Burrow that many weapons and you better look out because he's going to utilize them fairly quickly. Now, I would say six, the Dolphins. To me, I would go Pitts. And I know that that's not, you know, you can say that's a 12 personnel, it's two tight ends, but not really. What you're dealing with is a big wide receiver to go with the big wide receiver, Devontae Parker, and you got a speed guy on the outside, Will Fuller, for 1 year and maybe beyond that. I think you are really, really hard to match up with because you have to pay attention to Will Fuller's speed. He needs help over the top. And then you've got a 6 foot six, basically big, giant wide receiver that you can move all over the field. And then you got a jump ball winner in Gesicki and then, you know, Devontae Parker, who started coming on. I love Devontae Smith. But with that said, I just think Pitts, from a mismatch standpoint, I think one of the things you have to remember now, the background of the New England background, I know we're not supposed to mention this guy's name very often, but the Aaron Hernandez and Rob Gronkowski double tight end combination. You got Gesicki, and I'm not putting Gesicki in there with either one of those guys. Right. But I think in terms of Pitts, you do have that, and it creates so many matchup issues, especially because Pitts will block a little bit for you.
I have nothing to disagree with you there because I agree with all of it, but I'm going to go Jalen Waddle there. I think that you have a receiver who can win all over the field, and I've heard some whispers that they really like him as their receiver in this draft. So I'm going to say Waddle at number six. And that's it really interesting when, okay, we've got quarterbacks 1, 2, 3, 4, and then two receivers. And then, you know, things will get really interesting from then on out. But that's, if you're the Dolphins, you're traded back up to six to get, you know, to get that guy. And so it'll just be interesting to see if it is Pitts, if it is Waddle, you know, could it be Smith? But I think we're in lockstep thinking that it's going to be for a pass catcher. And then quickly for the Eagles, moving back from 6 to 12, I think first thing that comes to mind is, okay, they're rolling with Jalen Hurts. And this isn't like, Jalen Hurts is our guy, we're moving forward. This is more like, we don't see an obvious upgrade here. So we're going to roll with him and we're going to add draft capital. And maybe next year is where we make a move to go up and get that quarterback. But for the Eagles, their options are wide open now at number 12. I think there's a chance Devontae Smith could fall to them. Mm-hmm. I think there's, you're talking about some corners. J.C. Horn could be in that mix there at number 12. Don't rule out pass rusher like a Kwity Paye with the way that I know that front office thinks and the way they value that position. That's absolutely in play at that point. Rashawn Slater is another option there. So I think the Eagles are wide open now when sitting there at number 12. Plus, they got a future first rounder. So, even though the quarterback situation is a little unsettled, I think they have to feel pretty good about the move they made.
Yeah, I do too. And I just think that, right now the Eagles, since the Super Bowl, I mean, it's been the same thing with the Eagles that happened to the Falcons, only the Falcons, didn't win the Super Bowl. The Eagles did win the Super Bowl. And then they've just been a shell of themselves. And they keep trying to convince themselves that they're still, the window's still open. And it just never materialized. And we all watched it for ourselves. They just never got it together. And I think if you're honest with yourself and you're the Eagles, you really have to think about, look, we're more than a piece, one or two pieces away. We need to start rebuilding in some different areas of our team. And that's whenever I think it's very smart to move back and add picks. So I have no problem with what the Eagles did. I think it's pretty smart. There's plenty of talent, as you and I both know. You got a couple of big time cornerbacks, I think. You've got, three big time or four big time pass targets, receiving targets. When you add Pitts into the mix as a pass target, you got a couple of really good offensive linemen. I mean, and you got the quarterback. So the Eagles, if you just do the math, they're going to get a player who is going to make them better at 12, whether they're at six, whether they're at 10, whether they're at 12, one of those guys is going to be on the board for him. And then I didn't even mention, as you said, Kwity Paye, if that's a guy that they really like.
Yeah. And this is just all fascinating, and it's going to be interesting between now and the next month, what more happens? Do we see a little more movement? Or is it just, this is how it's going to stay and it's going to be kind of all blow up on draft day. So we did four quarterbacks came off the board in that scenario. So what do we think happens to Justin Fields? Is he, Carolina at eight then? Or do we see, do we see New England move from 15 to 7 and maybe snipe him? I mean, I think there's a lot of intrigue there. If it plays out top six, like we sorted it out, what happens with Fields? 8 makes the most sense, but that's where we could see some trade action.
Yeah, and remember this. Brian Billick said this one time I was at a mock draft at NFL Films back in, when was Geno Smith drafted? 2013, I think.
13?
Yeah. So it was 2013. And he made this comment. We were talking about, I wouldn't draft Geno Smith at 9 or whatever, but I would maybe draft him in the 20s. And we made that comment. And there was a group of, Greg Cosell, a lot of people that I have a lot of respect for is around there. I think Ron Jaworski, I believe Jaws is in there. And anyway, so we're all sitting there going pick by pick by pick, kind of running a mock draft. And Brian Billick said, okay, if you'd be willing to take him at 29, you better be willing to take him at 9. And right. His rationale on this, and this really does make sense. Once you draft a quarterback in the first round, you are now officially hitting the stopwatch on your job. You have to develop a quarterback. He's a first-round quarterback now. It doesn't matter if he's the 9th pick or the 29th pick. He's now a first-round quarterback, and your job is to develop him and to get the most out of him. And if you don't, i.e. Kyle Bowler, you will eventually get fired. And so that's the thing is you got to be really sure if you're taking Trey Lance, if you're taking Justin Fields, if you're taking Zach Wilson, if you're taking any of these guys. Because if you take a guy because you need a quarterback, but you don't really love him, your job is now officially on the line. You have now started the stopwatch on your job. And that guy that you didn't love, you better get the most out of him. So you better really like the guy. You better really like the guy that you're going to draft. And I think that's the big concern is if Justin Fields is there at 8, does Matt Rhule love him? Does Joe Brady love him? I don't know. Does number 9, do the Denver Broncos love him enough? That's the question you have to ask yourself. And that's the thing with Justin Fields or any quarterback. Do those teams love X quarterback, whoever that quarterback is? I mean, Lawrence is a default. We already know about Lawrence. But the right. other guys, your jobs are clearly on the line once you take that guy.
Right. And again, I can't emphasize this enough. In this draft process where area scouts and personnel directors, they were not able to be on the road during the fall and meet with these guys. And they've had limited interaction with these quarterbacks. So everyone's playing catch up in terms of learning about their character and just getting all the information that they usually have by now. That's why these pro days have a little extra importance this year. The whole process, scouting process, is about gathering information and having as many puzzle pieces. So when you put the puzzle together, you have a clear picture. This year, it's been a little bit of a lagged process to get all of those pieces and create the picture. And so it's more so than past years. This year's just been a little bit different. So transition that way into my top 100, which I posted today on The Athletic. A lot of interesting movement, and I expect maybe a little more tweaks before the draft actually gets here. Which I usually by the time April 1st is here, I'm set. This is my rankings. That's how I'm keeping it. But this year is just a little bit different, and we're playing catch up on a few of these guys in terms of injuries and just figuring out more information that necessarily the tape doesn't say. Nothing huge at the top. I put Kyle Pitts at number 2. It finally, I had him like at number 4 or 5, and it's just like, why am I dancing around this? This guy is the number 2 player in the draft.
Welcome.
I mean, this is, yeah.
Welcome. DJ just did it recently. You've done it.
Did he? So, yeah. Okay, there. Yeah.
All three of us have him, and I've had him at number 2 from the beginning. He's just too good.
It's the same thing I did with Quentin Nelson. I let the position kind of distract me a little bit and say, Quentin Nelson's awesome. He's a
guard.
Yeah, right. So he's like the 4th, 5th best player. And I just the more you think about it, it's just like,
put him there.
He's number 2, right?
Lawrence. Quentin was my 2 also, and he was your 2. Yeah, put the best players there. I mean, Kyle Pitts is a freak show. Put him there. But I'm curious about Devontae Smith now. I've got Devontae Smith as my 3rd best player. And I realize he's kind of, I think he's topped out. I'm kind of curious what you're doing with Devontae Smith before I get to number. Did he finish at number 3?
He's number 9 for me.
Okay.
And he's my number 3 receiver. So I've got Chase at 4. Waddle at 6, and then Devontae Smith at 9. I mean, obviously, it's not like he's, you know, he's good or not good type of conversation. He's really, really good. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of trying to slot him, you know, with these other players. And it's tough with these quarterbacks. You know, how do you – it's almost like quarterbacks shouldn't even be on a board like this because their impact is so much greater than every other position that it skews – where you stack them. So quarterbacks are tough. And, you know, I've got Lawrence at 1, Wilson at 3, Lance and Fields back to back. I mean, it's tough with those. But, you know, with Smith, there's so much to like about him. You know, obviously the body type isn't ideal. You worry about long-term durability, but you feel good about the player. And wherever he goes, whether it's Detroit at 7 or, you know, the Giants at 11, I mean, who knows where he ultimately ends up. But wherever it is, you feel like he's going to be productive. So just a quality player who's a top 10 player in this class.
You mind if I just throw some of these out here? I've got your top 100 in front of me.
What do you got?
Of just going in a long – or we'll have the longest podcast in history. So, you know, I've got Surtain higher than you do, but you have him top 10, so it's irrelevant. Yeah. I mean, he's cornerback 1. Cornerback 2, J.C. Horn, that's what I've got. Cornerback 3, I've got the same thing in Greg Newsome. When did you push him up after the pro day into your top tier, to number 18? That's high for Greg Newsome, but I think he's really talented, and he tested like a mother.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he was I think, 4.40, I think, in the 40.
A little faster, yeah. I think he was 4.38.
Yeah, he was ridiculous. And 4.38 40, 40-inch vert, 10.3 broad, 6.90 3 cone. And this is at 6 foot even, 192 pounds. I mean, the only two areas with Newsome that I'm worried about: missed at least 3 games every single year, each of the last 3 years, you know, is bothersome because he doesn't have, you know, you look at his body type and it's very narrow, it's very lean muscled. And so that's a worry. And then, you know, only one interception, 25 passes defended, but only one turned only one of those into a turnover. So two areas where you want to see better. You don't want to see him stay on the field. You want to see him create more turnovers. But besides that, I mean, it's an easy player to like. He's a route magnet, just a really quality player who tested off the charts. The struggle was with Caleb Farley, obviously, with the durability. And we touched on it last week. You know, it's a guessing game right now. We're just going to have to go based off of what we hear. Hopefully he has a long-term career, but you just worry about another issue popping up for him, you know, down the road with multiple back procedures on his resume going into the pros. So I moved him down, 29? Yeah, 29, which is an arbitrary number at this point because I don't know what to do with Caleb Farley. You know, it's going to fluctuate as we hear more and we have a better feel for what his appropriate draft value is. But at this point, I had him at cornerback 4 and the 29th player in the draft.
Yeah, I've got the same problems. And I talked to a general manager. I asked what to do with him, and he said I'd drop him out of the first round in your mock. I didn't. They had me redo my mock draft because my mock, you know, got slaughtered. And this upcoming week, I'm going to be on Mock Draft Live. They're going to be looking at my mock draft. So I basically made some changes. And I dropped Farley. And I was thinking about dropping him out of the first round. I ended up plugging him into, I think, the Green Bay Packers. It is going to be tough because it's an ACL, 2 back. As you said, he didn't play this year. There's a lot of questions. Just a lot of questions. And I don't – and the only way it's going to be answered – I talked to a team and said, how are you going to answer the question then physically? And they said, well, he's going to go get the medical – you know, he's going to handle the combine medical. And so we'll get a really good look and see what's going on. So he's a guy that will either fall or I think he'll climb back up the charts depending on what happens with those medicals.
Yeah, and every team's going to look at it differently. So, you know, one team could say, you know, if he gets out of the top 20, we're going to pounce. Where another team's going to say, we're not going to touch him in the top 50. So, yeah, it's just going to be, you know, where each team is, you know, if they feel like they're a corner away from competing, they might jump all over that and say, we'll roll that dice and see what happens. A couple years ago with Montez Sweat, when he had the heart issue, a lot of people were saying, oh yeah, it's going to be like Maurice Hurst. He's going to fall out of the first 3 rounds. And, you know, he still goes late first round and he's been a productive player for the Washington football team. So there's been past examples both ways. I thought it was interesting when I was done with this and I'm looking at it, 15 wide receivers in the top 100, easily could have been more. Easily. And 13 corners, But of the 13 corners, 11 in a top 62. So you look at it, guys, that second round is just, they're just loaded with corners. Elijah Molden, who's my corner five at 35 overall. Asante Samuel, 45 overall. Eric Stokes, 52. Kelvin Joseph, 54. Tyson Campbell, 55. Melifonwu, 58. Aaron Robinson, 62. So that second round, I've got, you know, six or seven corners log jammed in there. As really talented players, but there's a fatal flaw there. Maybe not a fatal flaw, but one area where it bothers you, and you just can't give them that first round bump. And so I don't know, any of those corners that you think I'm off on, or maybe you're higher or lower on than me?
You know, I have a little bit of a problem with Asante Samuel, and he worked out great. He's not the biggest guy. I just didn't think he made enough plays. And, I see all the traits. I don't see the same production. I'm a little worried about how you handle him. Like, can he play outside? Is he big enough to play outside? He's what, 5'10", 180? Is that what his height was?
I think it was exactly that.
I just think, you know, he's there on the borderline for me about whether or not I want to take him. Now, I think Eric Stokes has played himself. I think his tape, I like where you have him. I like where you have him better, more in the 50s. To be honest. Now, I think there's a chance he's going to go somewhere from 25 to 45 is the 25 to 40 because of the testing.
One of those teams, like, you know, the Packers set, in the late first or I could absolutely see that happening. Yeah. That makes sense. It's just, it's a group of really talented corners that they just might have a flaw or two. And in some teams are not going to be hung up on those flaws.
How are
some
you playing teams, Molden? Are you playing him just a nickel? Are you playing him like Minkah Fitzpatrick? Like, you've got him listed as a corner. How do you envision him?
I think he's a nickel corner. I think that's his best spot. Can he play outside? That's the question. Could he play safety? He doesn't necessarily have some of the size that I'm looking for at safety. I mean, Washington hasn't had their pro day yet, but he's probably 5'10", buck 90, so there's some questions there, but I just know he's a really good football player, and I'm kind of bullish on Molden. I think, he might not go as high as I think I'm 35. He might not go that high because he might be a little role specific as a slot corner. And so just because of, teams might not be looking for that exactly, he could fall a little bit, but that just means a team's going to get really, really good value at that point. The other position that I thought was really interesting was tackle. In this draft, or in this top 100, I have 12 tackles in the top 100, and that does not include Leatherwood, who I have a guard. The Michigan tackle, Jalen Mayfield, I have inside a guard. Vera Tucker, I have inside a guard. Okay. So there's some really interesting tackles in this group, which we've talked about all along. But one tackle I wanted to ask you about really quick, Brady Christensen over at BYU. Mm-hmm. He tested outstanding at BYU's pro day. And when you look at his numbers, here, let me pull it up here. Official pro day numbers, 6.05, 302, 4.89 in the 40, 1.71, 10, 34 vert, 10.4 broad, 7.333 cone, 4.52 in the shuttle, 30 reps. Just great numbers, outstanding numbers.
Those are tremendous numbers,
But the one number that sticks out to me more than the rest, 32 and a quarter inch arms. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a problem for a lot of teams.
And yeah, it is.
When you see that number, what does that do? Because honestly, when you watch his film, and I was talking with Brandon Thorne about this, you don't necessarily see lack of length as a debilitating issue for him.
No, you don't. You don't see it at this level, at the level he played. But which tape are you watching? Because really, there's only
right.
I mean, Taron Jackson. I guess Jackson will give you a little bit of a look, but really Peyton Turner was the only guy, and he did a great job against Peyton Turner. He really did a nice job against Peyton, although he got beat a couple of times by Turner's length. But I didn't, there's really wasn't many challenges on this year's tape, and I was really looking because listen, BYU is going to have potentially, let's see, three offensive linemen potentially drafted. You are going to have for sure two. You're going to have your quarterback drafted. there's a chance that that freaky tester at cornerback, Chris Wilcox, could get drafted.
Yeah, I think he gets drafted.
They got another safety named Zane Anderson, who tested great.
If he could stay healthy, he's definitely getting drafted. He just can't stay healthy.
And he could be a teams guy. And then I don't think Dax Milne gets drafted, but he'll be in consideration late, I think. So there's a lot of guys that there's a lot of BYU players I've had to look at. But it was hard to get the best looks possible because they just didn't have a good schedule. So I had to go back to some 2019 tape. I can tell you, in talking to my dad about arm length, his belief is really, it's all about how you know, if you've got a longer wingspan, then typically you got a broader back and you got a chance to get your hands out there a little quicker, or, you know, you got a little bit more quote unquote length to you. Number two, if you are efficient with your punch and it's well-timed, or if you're good at resetting your hands, you can survive. Those are really short arms to survive with. That's the only problem in it. And if he's facing a Montez Sweat, you know, that's a lot of that's a lot of problems because, well, I mean, look, Montez and Chase Young are problems for everybody. So I shouldn't just leave, you know, I shouldn't put that on him. But that long arm rush, that he's going to see more guys with the developed rush plan. And so the first thing they're going to do is, okay, when they watch tape, all right, we're going to stab this guy up and we're going to long arm him. We're really going to try to test him. And once we get him, you know, where he's concerned about that, then all of a sudden he maybe stops moving his feet on a slide because he's looking to brace up against the long arm. And before you know it, they're chopping at his outside hand and they're around the edge. So the long arm stuff, I mean, the arm length does matter. I think it can be overblown at times, but when you start talking about on the low 32 side, that's a concern. Now,
there's not many examples.
There's very, very few examples. And Rashawn Slater hitting the 33-inch mark at his pro day was like a big deal. That's a really big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Vera Tucker being, what was he? He was sub 33.
I think he was 32 and a quarter.
Yeah. I mean, that's a, you know, you don't see it on tape either.
32 is 32 and an eighth.
Yeah, he looks like he's fine on tape with that. Right. But I'm telling you, that kind of length is a big problem. So now all of a sudden you're looking at him back at guard again.
Exactly. All right. Well, if you want to read the whole top 100, it's on The Athletic right now. Go check it out. We're about a week away from The Beast coming out. Next Wednesday is the tentative date. So I want to get all the pro days this week in there. So be on the lookout for that. As always, check out Lance on Twitter at Lance Zierlein and everything he does at NFL Network, all his rankings and his reports. As always, please subscribe, rate, comment. We really appreciate it. And we will talk to you next week.